Hello, everyone. You have entered the battle phase. It is I, the Midnight Bard, your favorite bard, and I hail from the Ember Islands. Joining me, as always, is Sacro, who hails from Omashu.
Of course I do. I'm glad you picked that one.
Are you glad that I picked that one?
No, I'm not.
You a fan of the Earth Kingdom?
No, okay. I'm definitely not. How could you do this to me? You know I'm a fire guy.
Here's kind of a fun thing. So the styles of martial arts that correlate to the bending styles are real martial arts styles, right?
Yeah,
so for example, the airbenders use Bagua, waterbenders use Tai Chi, but I actually have trained in the fire bending style of Northern Shaolin Kung Fu. So like a lot of the times when I'm watching firebenders like do their thing, I was like, I do that. I can do that. It's actually pretty sweet.
You do the leg sweep thing that Zuko does when he does a little back thing and he flips around and shoots fire everywhere?
You know what? I think they made that one up for the show. I've never actually been taught that one. It must be a secret technique.
Probably. I don't know.
And you know what? I want to punctuate this by saying that, you know, in the higher levels of like fire bending and earth bending, etc., wherever, like, you know, towards the end of the series where they're like really fighting each other, it really does look a lot more like it would if you were actually like fighting each other, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that said, there is something to be said about like the way that, you know, animation and Hollywood kind of like picture martial arts, because they do a lot of like creative interpretations of what it should look like and what it would do to make it more visually appealing.
Gotcha. It's also more like the forms actually bring out this, not, I wouldn't call them spells, but like the actual bending comes from those.
Yeah.
You can't just like punch, right, and then bend. You have to like do a form or a move and then it shoots out fire.
Right.
So it is like more of the idea of I'm channeling my inner chi and then I'm forcing it out. So I kind of get why they went with that. I watched a documentary thing recently about Avatar where they went over the different styles and where they pulled them from and stuff, and how they were trying to do Japanese. Originally, they wanted to do like Japanese stuff, I think, like more Japanese history and stuff. And they ended up doing less of that and more of the Chinese side. And they got a Korean studio to make the whole thing.
Avatar really is like the coming together of a lot of different inspirations to make something greater than all of its parts, right?
Yeah, basically. Until Korra happens. Yeah, it was good.
But a couple of housekeeping matters before we get started. This is the podcast where Sacro and I and our friends watch and read anime, and we would love to hear what you're watching and reading, and if you would recommend it to us to watch and read as well. We are on all platforms at this point. We're on Spotify, Apple Music, Amazon Music, Samsung Podcast, and YouTube Podcasts. And additionally, these episodes that you guys hear here are the short version. There's a lot of times when all of us have a tendency to just go off the rails and on wild tangents. So I try to streamline the episodes whenever I upload them. However, if you are interested in hearing our unedited, uncut podcasts, you can find them on Patreon for only $1 at the battle phase. Be sure to check us out on our socials. We're on X, Threads, and Instagram at the battle phase. And today we're discussing Avatar. And specifically, we're going to be talking about the announcement that dropped for Avatar's 20th anniversary about the Seven Havens, what we know about it. But also, I kind of figure that, you know, we're going to talk about Avatar as a series additionally. So it's kind of a big epic, isn't it? This is almost feels like it's the first, and I'm going on, this is probably a hot take, but it's the first successful American produced anime.
What you have to give me a list of American produced animes, and technically it's not, they said it's
they
not anime.
A couple of days.
They don't consider themselves anime.
They said that it's not, they don't, well, I mean, like,
they said they're Korean.
It depends on how you define
so
anime.
They don't consider, they literally said, some of the producers said they didn't consider themselves an anime because the Japanese studio they sent it to refused them, and so they went to the Korean studio and said, okay, I guess we're not anime then, because they didn't come out of Japan,
right? Which, but anime kind of,
yeah, it's a style, I guess.
Yeah, it's a style. And what do you call it? Additionally, anime is just what they call animation, right? So, like, for example, King of the Hill is an anime. Do we consider it one? No. But, you know, it is what it is, right?
Yeah, I wouldn't say it's anime just because simply it doesn't come out of Japan. So, therefore, because, okay, so if something is from us, like SpongeBob, they consider it anime, right? Just because that's their word for it. But for anime as a world term, it's specifically animation that comes out of Japan. So it's anime inspired, obviously, but it's not like anime. There are some other shows I wish I could get the hold of. That would take way too long. And before the viewers get too excited, we're not going through all of Avatar today, right?
No, we are not going through all of Avatar. We're going to try to focus on what we know about like the new series. But, you know, if you have some fun things about like the first two series that you want to share, I mean, for example, I can say that beyond the first two series, which is The Last Airbender and The Legend of Korra, I actually read the novel for Kiyoshi, and actually Kiyoshi is my favorite Avatar because of those novels. She is so cool. But yeah, you know, like, so if you want to go down some rabbit holes, no problem. But yeah, so for the most part, today what we did is we watched the announcement trailer where you had like the voice actor for Zuko, I forget his name, is Dante Basco. Dante Basco, and the voice actress who played Korra, whose name is Janet Varney. So Dante Basco and Janet Varney both were, it looks like they were in a podcast, and they were announcing for Avatar's 20th anniversary the new series coming up, which is something that we've been kind of waiting on, because for a while there we've kind of been eagerly waiting to see what came out of Avatar Studios, which is something that Nickelodeon put together, because Avatar was just like this runaway hit success, right? So I would say that there's been a couple of announcements that they have made. They talked about a couple of animated features that they were going to do, like movies. But other than that, there hasn't been like anything like solid for like the main series, right? So this is the first time that we're hearing about it. So,
yeah, I always thought it was interesting how the Avatar worked. And I always thought Nickelodeon kind of slept on their massive property. Like it's pretty popular. So it's not like maybe SpongeBob level, but it was popular and they've done nothing with it. Like the original Avatar was so the finale got an insane amount of views, and the finale is fantastic.
Yeah.
And then they made Korra. Korra was so hyped. Mm-hmm. People loved season one. Season two was okay. Season three was online only. And so was season four. Only on their website. And it's like crazy because it was like, I don't know why they switched it online. I don't know if the popularity was waning, but the way they handled relationships in that show sucked. So I kind of get it. Korra was kind of unlikable. Aang was annoying at times, but he was like a character you could still like and you could see and grow with him. Korra was just annoying for like season two onward. Actually, season one on.
And I know that I read before what happened, but I can't recall. If I'm not mistaken, what ended up happening is that there was just kind of like a lot of production troubles in the background. So the reason that the Korra series feels a little disjointed is because sometimes they would feel like they had this many episodes, right? So like, for example, the first season, they knew that they were going to keep it short,
mm-hmm.
and they didn't know that they were going to get a season two. They went into it with a one season mindset. But then Nickelodeon said, hey, you know what? Second season. So they're like, oh, okay, so we can grow on this. And then second season, as it's going through, they're like, hey, about a third season, I don't know if you're gonna get it. So they're like, oh, okay, so we have to conclude it here. And then they got it. And then like whenever they got it, they start working on it. And then like the studio says, well, you might not have as many episodes as you think. And so they were planning for X amount of episodes, and suddenly they have to, you know, condense it because now they don't know if they're going to get like all the episodes that they were promised, and so on and so forth. So basically, this is kind of the thing that makes Korra kind of like a weird thing. I feel like if from the start they knew what they had to work with and they knew that it wasn't going to change, they probably could have prepared a little better.
Mm-hmm.
But this is like trying to build a house with somebody constantly telling you that you have more materials than you actually do, and then just saying like, oh, hey, never mind, we actually don't have that many materials, and then coming back and said, hey, guess what? We found some materials. And you're excited because you have more materials. But then they're like, oh, but it's actually not as much as you think it is. So, you know, I feel like that also kind of would affect the writing when you think about it.
It would, yeah.
If you have like, yeah, because if you're thinking, I have this much time to develop these ideas, and then the studio tells you, you don't have that much time. Now you have to kind of figure out where to trim the fat so that you can still get something good, but you also have to kind of give up on a lot of things that you were probably setting up.
Yeah, I literally stopped caring after the end of season 3. It's kind of when I was like, yeah, I don't think I'm going to finish this, actually. So I never did finish season 4. I just saw the memes around it when it came out. But I think the biggest sin of Nickelodeon Studios is that they didn't take that bending game that they have in the show, I can't remember what it's called, and turn that into a real game. That was such a cool concept.
Yeah, pro bending.
The first season, that was such a cool idea. Like, because I actually had an idea like that back when, before Avatar came out. I was writing a story and I'm like, oh, I really like the idea of the bending. I wonder if I can just kind of copy some of the elemental stuff and make it into like a sport of some kind. Basically, I was trying to like do a Quidditch thing, but with sports. Or with the magic of bending and combat. And then the show came out and I was like, oh, it's exactly what I liked. I want that. And then they ruined it. They just never did anything with it. Like, Nickelodeon Studios just always throws their crap away. Except SpongeBob.
No kidding. It's difficult to see, especially when it's a property like this that you really, really enjoy, right? Because I feel like Avatar is just perfect for all kinds of just merch, right? So, like, for example, the one thing that bothers me is that Avatar is so cool, and I feel like it lends itself so perfectly for a video game, and there hasn't been any good video games for Avatar. It's so weird.
Did you see the latest one they made?
The last one that I saw was, I think I had a Legend of Korra one that was on the Switch. I don't remember what it was called.
They released a new one last year, and it was the buggiest, worst thing ever. It was literally, they would show pictures for the cutscenes, have someone talking over it. None of the original cast came back for it. And then they would just jump to the next scene where they're fighting somebody without explaining who that person is. So basically you have no idea what's happening in the game unless you already watched the show. It was just, super bad.
That.
It was literally one of the worst games of 2020. What was it, 4? Man, I have no idea what year I'm in anymore. So why don't we talk about the actual thing we watched?
Okay, so what we learned about the Seven Havens in the trailer, or I guess the announcement that they made, is that it takes place after Korra. This is going to be an earthbending avatar. And it's in an era after Korra opened the spirit gates at the end of season 4 of The Legend of Korra. The avatar is no longer revered as humanity's savior or balance keeper, but rather as humanity's destroyer. And the four nations as they used to be no longer exist. Instead, we have what's called the Seven Havens. Now, this isn't something that we saw in the trailer. It's something that I've heard on YouTube shorts and TikTok and all that. The reason why the four nations no longer exist is because there was some manner of cataclysm after the end of Korra season 4, where Korra had to basically do something drastic in order to save the world. And what ended up happening is that she split the four nations. So if you can imagine the level of power that took, as some people are actually going on to say that Korra is probably going to go down as the strongest avatar to have ever lived after this, because considering the amount of effort or the level of skill and power that it would take to actually sever four continents, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So a couple of things that I kind of wanted to highlight here. So the spirit gates are open. The spirit gates, which was something that separated the spirit world from the physical realm. And they were closed initially by Avatar 1, which was the first Avatar, to separate humans and spirits so that they can live peacefully independent of each other, because humans and spirits just could not get along. And additionally, spirits were so wild and so powerful that a bad spirit could just decimate entire populations of humans if they wanted to. So humans had to live on the backs of lion turtles just for the sake of staying safe. Avatar 1 made it so that, you know, hey, spirits, you live in your spirit world. Humans will live in a physical world and will be separate. But somehow, you know, elements of our worlds will still kind of like overlap from time to time. It's weird. Korra decided to undo that at the end of season 4. and she opened the spirit gate. So now spirits are coexisting with humans again, in a move that will go down in history as probably the dumbest thing an avatar has ever done, in my opinion.
Yeah, followed closely by the fire guy not killing his friend.
Which I
led to genocides, many, many genocides.
Roku, yeah. Avatar Roku. And I will defend Roku because it's not like he didn't warn him, right? And the thing is, Sozin did back off after Roku basically stunted on him and didn't do a thing. The only reason that Sozin managed to get to go through with his plan is because at one point Roku is trying to save his home from an exploding volcano, and he's just breathing in all this poison. And Sozin's still like, oh, I could help you because we're friends, but you know what? Genocide is what I want to do. So anyway, bye.
Yeah,
and so like it's kind of like one of those things. Yeah, so like a lot of people say that he should have. I think that Roku did what he thought was right. And I feel like if, with the exception of this, like, I don't know, like this disaster that ultimately ended up claiming his life, he probably would have been successful. Like, you know, like if Sozin had just been like a little older, if they had both lived to the end of their lives, probably nothing would have gotten done. But Sozin saw an opportunity and he took it.
He probably would have, like, he was probably already prepping his kids to do it after he died. Like, hey.
That's actually a good question. Like, I wonder if that's the case. We'd have to see.
There's a mention of him with his kids. That he basically was prepping them for it, but then he was like decided not to or something, and then he dies. Oh no, he died.
Well, the thing is, Sozin's comet was the reason why this was successful, right? I think it would have actually been a lot more difficult if the comet hadn't just been perfectly aligned with Sozin's, you know, conquest.
Mm-hmm.
But so like if he, I think it was Azulon that was like Sozin's son, right? If Sozin had, you know, been prepping Azulon for a conquest of the entire world, sure. But like, if it happened after Sozin's comet passed, and what would they have done? Nothing, right? Or it probably would have been a conquest, but it wouldn't have been as easy as it was for Sozin. My take, I don't know. But yeah, so basically,
how many times is this comet going to keep passing over the Earth?
Once every 100 years.
They get it twice. That's unlucky.
Yeah, well, I mean, Aang was asleep for about 100 years, so that explains why. But
that's unrealistic to comets.
I would have said the fun thing would have been like if Aang had woken up like 50 years earlier, you know what I mean? And just like now he's got 50 years to prepare and to like put the Fire Nation back where they belong, right? But anyway, neither here nor there. So we live in a world now. After the spirit gates have been opened, there's no longer four nations, there's seven havens, and we're following an earthbender avatar, and they made mention about this avatar having a twin, and how they're going to have to try to, I don't know, save the world while they're being hunted by both human and spirit enemies. So, question for you is, what are your thoughts?
Oh, actually, I guess I'll go right into it then. So, they also mentioned that they're trying to figure out their past. Him and or them, because we don't know if it's a guy or girl yet, and the twin.
It's a girl.
Okay, her and her twin are trying to figure out their past. So I don't know what that's referring to, but the idea, because I actually, like I said, I didn't finish season four of Korra. Season three was like, yeah, this is stupid. I'm done. I'm out. So Korra ruined everything. It sounds like, which is about what I expect from that girl. She was just,
oh, damn it.
She just had girl failure written all over her. I don't know. The way she handled her relationships in the entire show just made me think that this girl's never going to become anything better.
Oh, God damn it.
I mean, to be fair, the guy also ruined his, I can't remember his name off the top of my head. The firebending guy.
Kurok. Oh no, the firebending guy. Well, I mean, here's the thing. After, it almost feels like after Yang Chen, there is just like this sequence of avatars who did not live up to what they should have done.
Mm-hmm.
But you also can't blame them for it, you know, because people treat them as deities, but they're just people, you know. An avatar is just a person who happens to have access to all four elements, but they're still a person. Yeah. You know, so like making mistakes is kind of something that they do, you know, like what are you going
to
do?
I think there's an issue where they don't spend enough time like going through their past, because they can go to their past lives and like look at all of their memories and their decisions and what they've done. They have like basically Google in their brain for thousands of years. They could just go back and be like, huh, what these guys do? Aang does it for a little bit. I don't know if Korra does it besides going to talk to Juan or one.
Yeah. Well, Korra lost her connection to the Avatar state.
Oh, she did at the end of the show, or when did she lose that? Hold on.
She did. I'm trying.
I remember now.
I'm trying really hard to remember, but I can't remember.
She also just wasn't very good at it anyway. She couldn't do the spiritual side of it at all, which is why she couldn't do airbending. Mm-hmm. She literally figured out the other three almost instantly and could not figure out airbending because she just could not get in touch with her spiritual side. But no, aside of that, though, I think an earthbender is a cool, I mean, it was the obvious choice, but so the earthbender in a like post torment world, kind of like, how many years later is it actually?
Well, it would be after Korra's death. I'm actually not entirely sure. So she lives a full life.
Where did Korra go?
And then
she left with Asami, right? Like they left to go do something.
They went on a vacation to the spirit world, right? But like they do come back eventually. So it's almost like, how to put this? They only went there for a little bit. They didn't stay gone.
Okay. Well, I'm trying to figure out, because if she lived 100 years, which is, you know, could happen, but most of them lived like 60 or 70. So
I posted the picture of what the new Avatar looks like on the thread here. She's the little one.
Oh, they have.
So like the little one right here with the prosthetic leg, that's her. And then the person here, I guess, is like a guardian or like a tag along or like
that's
whatever.
That's the Avatar?
Yeah, that's the Avatar. So
the art's really fuzzy.
We follow her really. Yeah, it's a really small picture, but like she starts off very young, and also I heard a lot of stuff about like there's gonna be like a lot of things about like, you know, having to do with the fact that she's missing a leg, like almost like a message of like being handicapable and all that stuff. I'm not sure if that's true, but like, you know, there's people on TikTok theorizing and stuff. So
that makes sense. I mean, they haven't covered anything like that yet. Like, what would happen if you had to still bend without a leg, especially as an earthbender who needs their legs? They stomp all the time. That's actually 90% of what they do is stomp. That's what Toph's always talking about.
Well, they have to be.
Oh, wait, just hold on a second. Actually, Toph was blind. Like, we already got a handicapped character.
Toph was blind. So, yeah, so there's a lot to be said about Avatar as a series really talks to, you know, being able to do a lot of things even when you're not whole or complete, right? Because I don't know if you saw this, but like this would have been season 3 of Korra, but like they had like those four benders who were just basically eco-terrorists, right? And one of them didn't have arms. She was a water bender, but she didn't have arms. And what she did is she would create like arms for herself, kind of like these whip
tentacle
things.
Yeah, I remember her.
Out of water. Yeah, and kind of it's kind of the same with a lot of things, like, you know, so Toph being a blind bender, but she can see through the earth. And I'm sure that there's others that I can't remember right now, but yeah.
Mm-hmm. My only problem here is she looks too young. She looks like a Pokemon protagonist. Or
she does look like a Pokemon protagonist. I thought the same
like,
thing.
It's like she's got a rock gym going on. This is her older brother just watching her train. I mean, that's fine. Whatever. The character designs for Avatar were kind of a mixed bag to me anyways. But I was really hoping they wouldn't be kids. Like kids. Like Aang was 12. But in Korra, they're all 14 and above.
Are they? I thought Korra was the oldest Avatar that we've seen as a protagonist at age 18 or so.
Oh, wait. Well, no. I mean, the whole cast. I didn't mean, like, specifically the Avatar. I thought she was 16 or 17, though, right? No, wait. They're working in the mine. Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking of.
It's exactly what I was thinking of, too. Like, whenever I saw her, I was like, she looks like Iris from Pokemon. Like, she has, like, the same color palette.
I don't think the design's bad. I don't think it's a story for a kid character, but I mean, sure. Yeah, whatever. It's a kid's show.
Well, you could argue that the story of Aang also wasn't for a kid character, because when you think about it, he is what, all of 14 years old or so?
He's 12.
12. Okay, so yeah, he's 12, and he's having to stop a war, and so he's a child soldier.
Mm-hmm.
you know, well, and he has to be the leader that leads the resistance against a tyrant takeover, basically. So that also wasn't a story where, for a child protagonist, but the fact that he was a child protagonist really was very captivating in that you got to see him grow up earlier than he should have, probably. But yeah.
Well, he was 12 and the rest of the cast was much older. Well, not much older. Like Katara's 2 years older. She's 14. Zuko was 15 or 16. I know Sokka was 15 or 16. So they're all like teenagers and he's a child. So I mean, I guess it's probably not that big of a deal, but I don't know. She just looks way younger than Aang did, though. But maybe I'm just misremembering because I was a child when I watched Aang. Or
it's also possible that she's just short, you know, because like what if she's 12 also just like Aang, but, you know, she's just smaller, like she has a smaller frame.
Yeah, yeah. I haven't seen any official artwork. Interesting. I do like the idea, though, of the whole Avatar becoming like reviled. That's a cool concept. And
I want to just say this right here, because I feel like the announcement trailer was written to be purposefully deceiving, you know, because there is a part where he says this is an era where the Avatar isn't humanity's savior. It is humanity's destroyer, making it sound like the role of the Avatar has changed. I think that what has changed is people's perception of the Avatar because of what Korra did. People no longer see the Avatar as somebody who keeps balance and who is supposed to be, you know, like their savior, their helper, their superhero, basically. But now they're like, oh, no, the Avatar destroyed the world. The Avatar is evil, you know, so.
What did stop an Avatar from turning evil? They could just do that.
They could just do that. And, it's something that I always kind of played with. It was an idea that I got very early on whenever I was watching The Last Airbender. That I thought to myself, has there ever been an Avatar that just decided not to be the good guy? I feel like that would be so easy to do.
I guess Korra kind of did. She was just like, I'm not going to be the good guy. I'm going to do what I need to do.
She really was, though. But like the problem is that I feel like Korra just made a lot of bad choices. You know, like we talked about Edelgard in a previous episode, and you were really like hardcore, like Edelgard made her own problems.
Yeah, yeah.
I feel like Korra made her own problems, you know? So,
Korra was a walking problem.
She had issues. Like, that's not to say that she was... Because here's the thing. A lot of people say that Korra bad Avatar, and I agree. Maybe she didn't do the best job, but I don't think that as a character she's bad. Because she's... how to put this? She's coming off the back of Aang. And Aang is basically the humanity's savior. So she's already in somebody's shadow. And the thing is, because Aang was such a good avatar, or, you know, like people perceive him to be such a good avatar, there's also that feeling that, well, now people are going to be very positive towards the Avatar because the Avatar saved us. You know, he stopped the Fire Nation from doing whatever. He reestablished balance. So obviously Korra is going to be great. So you got to feel like from the time that she was young, people were kind of like, feeling her head with this, that, you know, like, you are going to be great. You're the one who came before you. Fantastic. Just no notes. Perfect. 10 out of 10. But, you know, that you're coming right after him and he saved the world. What are you going to do? You're going to be great. It's going to be fantastic. Everybody's going to love you. And so, like, I feel like that's something that probably got in her head early on. So whenever she's having to come to face these things and realize, oh, shit, this actually requires some really hard choices, and I really have to think about not what seems is the best choice, but what actually is the best for everyone. It's not as easy because you can't make everyone's dreams come true, so to speak. You actually really have to stomp on some people in order to establish balance, and it doesn't feel good, but it is the thing that I have to do. And I feel like she was so headstrong that she couldn't, that her way of thinking wasn't the best way of thinking, but rather that she had to step outside of herself in order to see what was best for everyone. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Maybe I should actually finish Korra. I just wrote it off because I didn't enjoy the first three seasons. Oh, let me correct that. I liked the first season, and then the second and third I didn't care for.
Funny story. I didn't like the first season almost at all. Because that's the one where all the weird relationship problems start.
Mm-hmm, but it got worse in the second season.
It got pretty worse in the second season. And I didn't like the... Here's the thing. I feel like the first season of Korra was carried by the villain because the villain was so good.
Yeah.
And getting Steve Bloom to voice him, I mean, just like, how could you make just all of these winning choices and still like make some of the worst choices ever written in a series, right? Like, you know, Korra going on a date with Bolin only to... decide that she wants to be with Mako instead, or
she always wanted to be with Mako. She was using Bolin, which makes her just the awfulest person ever, really, because that's two brothers. What are you doing? And then at the end of the day, she's like, by the way, actually, I think I like women, and then dates the girl who what's his name cheated on her with. It's literally the thing that ruins the series, besides the off-road choices and like other aspects.
It was a very CW teen drama thing, mm-hmm. right?
I don't know what they were doing there.
Yeah.
We didn't get that in the original.
Like, this is Avatar The Vampire Diaries. I don't know what to say.
It's more like Avatar Gossip Girl.
Avatar Gossip Girl, yeah. So, it was insane, but
so what do you?
The thing is, I don't think that Korra was a bad series overall. I think when you step outside of the bad choices that were made, which there was a lot, it is the story of somebody who basically is the successor to somebody who is perceived to be really, really great, and she's having trouble finding herself in his shadow. Mm-hmm. I really feel like that was it.
That's fine.
The story went to some really dumb places.
Yeah, I was gonna say,
I don't know why, but
it's just like the original story was so much better, and that's also the problem with Korra, because you have to compare the two. They're the same world, same universe.
Oh yeah, you actually bring up an interesting point. This is not just an in-universe problem.
No.
This is an IRL problem, because the first one was so good that Korra had no chance.
No, like the way that the characters interacted in the world and the story, the grand adventure, everything just felt so well paced and put together. There was some like kind of like downer moments where I'm just like, dude, just get it on, just get it over with. Season one had a lot of like filler episodes, it felt like, but they're establishing character. But by the time the show gets flowing around the end of season one and into season two, like this show just hits it out of the park every time, all the way till the ending. And then the next series shows up and doesn't do as well, and people kind of like write it off a little bit, but it's still such a cool concept of a world. They had to do something with it, so going forward with this idea that they're doing now and bringing in the new Earth Avatar, which cool, finally get an Earth Avatar. I hope the series survives long enough to get a Fire Avatar again, because that's what I want to see.
That would be cool. I think one of the movies that they're making will be about a Fire Avatar.
I know they're making a movie they're making a movie series about Zuko.
Right.
So Zuko's going on his own adventure.
So not a Fire Avatar, but you know, Zuko.
He's getting like two or three movies, which I'm like, that's crazy. Go ahead, do that. That's my favorite character. Let's roll this. Because Zuko had one of the best like redemption arc stories. It was so realistic, so
something to be said here, and I don't mean to interrupt you, because I 100% agree with you that Zuko is probably one of the best redemption arcs ever put to screen. No question, hands down, right?
What?
You were actually mentioning something about Avatar feeling like it had a bunch of filler episodes early on, and I had to kind of like go double check something, and I don't know how much this affects things. But the original Avatar season one had 20 episodes, and Legend of Korra had half of that.
True.
You know, and there is something to be said that, you know, they did expect this to be a one shot and we're done. But I feel like if they were trying to establish the same depth that the original Avatar series had, they wouldn't have had the ability to do it in half of the amount of episodes, you know?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, that's more talking to that. Like the two series still. I more was trying to move forward to the new series and what we can expect on that. I do believe the original series was by far better than Korra, but I also didn't finish Korra, so I can't really compare it fully until I know. Okay, actually, I do have one question before we talk about what we want to see in the new series. Why did she split the four? Does it say why she split the four nations?
No, so that actually happens after the series is over.
Okay.
And based on the material that we've gotten so far, it's not something that we know. All that we know is that there was a cataclysm, and this is what she had to do.
So she probably caused the cataclysm, knowing her bad choices are part of the series. That's her character design.
Oh no!
So she probably let some like nine-tailed fox type demon, you know, like destroyed the village in the first episode of Naruto. Like she's probably let some giant demon do something that was destroying things, or not demon spirit. And then she's like, "Well, I guess you know what you got to do," and splits all four nations. Like, why would you do that?
Yeah, and it's also not said that that she intended to split the four nations. Mm. It could have been that in order to stop whatever was happening, she had to do like just the most amount of bending that she's ever had. And this was just a result of it, you know, like a consequence of what she did.
Do you think that killed her? Do you think that's, she died right after that?
Oh, it did.
Oh, okay. So literally she dies and then immediately this new girl has to be like, huh? What? That's insane start to a new series. Is it going to be airing on Nickelodeon, or is this like going to be an online thing, or like?
I imagine that it's going to be airing on Nickelodeon. I can't be sure.
We
got to
do weekly episodes on it when it starts, because that's
for sure.
That would be such a fun.
This is either
going to
be Nickelodeon or Paramount Plus. I would 100% believe that it's going to be on Paramount Plus.
Do you think they release an episode at a time, or will they do it a whole series at a time?
God, dude, like if they do a whole series at a time, I don't know that binging is going to be the best way to discuss this.
No,
but,
we'll do half and half. We'll do the first, I don't know, it'll probably be 12 episodes again, because they hate us. Probably like first six episodes, and we'll watch the next six episodes, and we'll do two things on it. Okay, so what do you want to see from the series then? Like, what are you hoping comes out of this?
Well, you know, this is going to be a weird thing to say. I want to see redemption for Korra. You know, because I don't feel like she was a bad character. I just feel like people's expectations of her, IRL and in-universe, just never gave her the opportunity to be herself.
True.
As I proved. Here's the thing, too, is like whenever we're watching like The Last Airbender, Aang was always in danger. It's not that he wasn't, but it always felt like, you know, he, through ingenuity or through his kindness or, you know, through his friends and his allies, etc., always got out of things before they got too bad. If you watch The Legend of Korra, it feels like they do not pull their punches at all. Like, she goes through the ringer. Korra goes through some stuff that would leave anyone, like, with post-traumatic stress disorder 100%. And it's something that they touch on a little bit in the fourth season. I say a little bit. It's a huge subplot of the fourth season that, you know, that she is traumatized from, like, nearly surviving the villain of season 3. So, you know, and gosh, like, dude, you should watch season 4 is all I'm trying to say. Like, because I don't think that it's going to change your opinion of her as a character, but I think you'll find a lot of, like, really interesting story elements mm-hmm. that you probably wouldn't have expected.
I watched season 3 when it aired, so that was what, in like 2013,
something like that.
Oh,
yeah,
my...
it would have been like 2013. That was a while ago.
Yeah, that was a long time ago.
So I would say that I definitely want to see redemption for her. Like, I really want, in the same way that we kind of got like, not what's the opposite of redemption?
Did you hear that?
We saw a little bit of the negative side of Aang in Legend of Korra, because everybody kind of like reveres Aang as being like this paragon, right?
Uh-huh.
But in The Legend of Korra, we kind of get, you know, talking points from Bumi and his siblings that he was kind of detached as a father. You know, like Bumi and Kaya saying that he was very distant with them, but he loved Tenzin because Tenzin was the airbender, you know? So.
Yeah. What is with what is with shows from our childhood making bad dads out of the main characters?
Aang, arguably not the best dad.
No.
Arguably.
Well, we don't know a whole lot about it. We just know about the few lines they talked about it during the episode where they're hanging out, the siblings are.
Yeah.
And what's her name was loved by her mom more.
Yeah, Kaya. So God, poor Bumi. Yeah. Just like in the fucking middle.
The one who couldn't bend, therefore unloved by his parents.
Oh, no, this is so terrible, but it's probably very accurate to real life, because, you know, if you have a kid that's really smart or one that's really talented, but one that's just plain neutral, I mean, like, what do you do?
I don't have kids. I have no idea, but My dad definitely
neither
took
do
my,
I.
My two siblings who are good at sports, he took them out with him more often than the rest of us. So I'm not saying he loved them more, but he definitely took them out to get donuts with him on weekend trips.
Oh, well, I
so, you know,
and you know, same. I mean, me and my sister had this weird thing where I was my mom's favorite, but she was my dad's favorite.
Always.
And like, it's funny because, you know, we talk about it all the time where it's like, you know, my sister would be like, "Mom was so mean to me." I was like, "Mom was never mean to me." And I'd be like, "You know, Dad was kind of like relentless with me." And she's all like, "Oh, really? I was his favorite." I was like, "I know."
Dude, that just kind of explains like Latino households, right? Or Latin households right there, though.
That's true. It's very true. That is Latin households.
Dads love their daughters and daughters, or moms love their sons. It's like, what?
But we have like this almost preferential treatment, it looks like, towards the bending siblings, whereas mm-hmm. the one that had no bending is just kind of like, what do? You know, like when your dad and your mom saved the world and they're some of the best, the most renowned benders of their particular element, well, Aang having all four, and you're just a normal dude, you know?
Yeah.
It feels like that old show that was on Nickelodeon, My Dad is a Rock Star.
Oh, I remember that show. That show was insane.
Yeah, that show was pretty wild. But yeah, it's kind of a weird place for him to be. But so what I was getting at here is that we got kind of like the dark side of Aang, kind of, whenever we were talking about him in The Legend of Korra. I really would love it if the new series kind of gave us the good side of Korra. Like maybe, because we don't know how old she lived to be.
Mm-hmm.
But it's possible that, you know, after the events that we saw in the series, that she decided to start doing better, or that she became more wise. And she kind of started to figure herself out. I really would love a redemption for her.
I hope she went worse. I want to see her go down the absolute worst timeline she could have. And that's what ends up doing all this.
Oh, my
because
God.
you want to, redemption arcs are cool, but not off screen. Make her worse. Make her destroy things. She caused this whole thing. She basically Ganon from the Zelda games, where she's just like, calamity time. And then the new girl has to come in and be like, "Oh, I'm officially an avatar now. I should probably
fucking yikes.
I should probably fix this." Things I want to see in the new series. I want to have another cast that's not like the first one. I don't want them to try to copy like they did in the second season series.
You don't like the Power Rangers setup where one of each color?
No, well, I mean, I don't mind there being one of each bender to teach her because it just makes general sense. But
right.
I want more of, not just, here's the funny right. one, here's the serious one, here's
oh,
the this one.
I see what you're saying.
No.
You want a little more nuance with your characters, not them playing into an archetype that was previously established.
So
Bolin and Sokka kind of being the funny guy, Mako being like the Zuko analog, etc.
Mako wishes he was Zuko.
Mako wishes, a little bit, right?
Yeah, literally, yeah. I do want them to have all the elements displayed. And I don't want them to lean heavily into romance because they keep doing it poorly.
Well, the lead for this one is a literal child, so I wouldn't expect
Aang
that
was
anything.
A literal child. And he pulled a 14-year-old, which 12-year-old to 14-year-old, and also opposites, because male 12-year-old, female 14-year-old, completely age different. You might as well add an extra 2 years on there because men, we age slower.
Yes.
Because puberty.
A lot slower.
Literally, because of how we're designed. Yeah. We'll talk about it if we ever do like a full Avatar episode, but I never liked Aang and Katara. I always thought it was a terrible matchup that they wrote because that's what you do. You make the main characters fall in love with each other. So I never cared for that. So I never liked that. But then Korra just said, let's just make everything worse. And so I was like, you know what? They should just not touch romance at all. Like, no romantic inclinations, unless it's, like, the very end of the series and you start working on it but don't show it. I get why animes just don't put characters together, because anime would also probably ruin it. They're always just like, we're not doing it yet.
It really depends on, like, the writer, though, man, because there are some writers that understand what romance is like and they write it well. Like,
there
I would
are,
say, look at but this. Hear me out, and I know you've seen this anime. I feel like you're going to agree with me. Maybe not. I find it really hard to predict what you're going to say sometimes. But in the entire run of Frieren,
okay,
we see almost no romance between Frieren and Himmel, but you feel it.
Oh, no, it's obvious.
It is there.
It's super obvious. Yes. From episode one and on.
Right. And you and the thing is, it's so well done that it's really hard to think of it in any other way than just probably one of the best romances that never sailed, right? Whereas Avatar, like, it's a whole ass subplot from, like, I would say season two onward.
I think, and there's a big difference between those two, just, though. One's written for adults and teenagers, like teenage to adults, right? Free Rent is definitely not written for kids, even though it could be. It's not, but Avatar's written for literal children.
Well, you say that, but, like, the thing is, I don't think that that's something that, based on just looking at the themes and the stuff that they have to go through in Avatar, I would say that it was written with an older teenage audience in mind, like middle to late teenagers.
Maybe.
Because this is a war drama at the end of the day with the mask of a goofy cartoon, you know?
Yeah, I mean, they do have some really, like, above ideas of, like, some dark concepts of war, right? I mean, the third episode, we see the genocide, like the after effects of it, Aang goes through. But as a kid, you're just not thinking about it. You're just like, oh, wow, they're all gone now. Because they never outright say it.
There was torture in Avatar.
Yeah, they straight up murdered and got rid of every single airbender. They got rid of all of them. And that's well, they genocided not them.
There was war crimes committed in Avatar.
There were a lot, like, yes. But what I'm trying to say is that like the romance subplots were very, very child-oriented. Kids need to understand. These characters like each other. We're setting that up right now. They like each other.
Mm.
Or at least he likes her. We'll find out if she likes him later. And like that was set up to do that thing. And that's fine.
Sokka and Suki, like very obviously, I'm sorry, you cannot convince me that they did not. I'm like, there was that one episode. I think it's the one where Katara has to go find the dude that killed their mom. And Zuko is trying to, like, you know, go through the motions to kind of, like, get her to, like, maybe not forgive him, but at least, you know, like, be more tolerant of him so that she's not always, like, trying to bite his head off. And he sneaks into Sokka's tent where Sokka is pantsless with a rose in his mouth with candles, you know, and the moment he walks in, he's all like, hey, Suki. I was like, this man was waiting to get to score. What?
He was hoping Suki would walk that way, and then she didn't. And then she eventually shows up later. And then
no, she was there. Like, she saw Zuko coming, and she pretended, like, oh, hey, Zuko. She walked away. Like, so she was on her way, dog.
Yeah. I mean, yes, there's some, like, stuff that's like, dude, that shouldn't be in a kid's cartoon. I mean, it doesn't matter if it's in a kid's cartoon, because kids aren't going to understand it. But yeah.
Right.
There's definitely, like, some stuff going on. Also, I love that the community was just like, why would you do this when you know, there's a girl who can feel the earth moving with her feet, so nothing you do is secret around here.
And never considered this, but yeah.
So the whole Zuko era where he takes everyone on a little field trip to do something, loved that section of the show.
It was pretty good.
Holy crap.
I love how Toph tried it. She just couldn't, though.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. She's like, I never got to go on a field trip with Zuko. Yeah. the Katara Zuko episode was literally probably my favorite the entire series. The one where they go and save their dad, too, is pretty good. Where they go to Seeking Rock or whatever it's called.
Yeah.
That was a fun episode with lots of fights, some interesting concepts of like how that all works. Very funny episode. Then you go to their episode and you're like, she was sort of like going to murder a man, but she didn't.
Yeah, that's true. And Zuko was not going to stop her.
No.
He like literally was like, you know what? If this is what you have to do, this is what you have to do, dog. I mean,
Zuko understood Katara better than I think any of the other characters because they related immediately in a way. But
that's true.
They related in a way that made them adversarial as well. But they're both older siblings doing this and that, and you know.
I think that Zuko also kind of... he gave Katara reasons to be, like, you know, skeptical of him. Mm-hmm. And not more so than just, you know, like, chasing the Avatar, hunting the Avatar for the first two seasons, right? But also because in the one connecting moment that they had in the Earth Kingdom, where it looked like they were finally like starting to understand each other, Zuko immediately turns around and tries to kill Aang, you know, after she was considering using her sacred water to like heal his scar and all that crap.
Yeah, because
so
for one fading moment, you know, he thought he'd be brought back. Mm-hmm. And I hated the character for that moment, but that's the moment that really defined that he would be coming back. He would find his way, hopefully, or die.
Yikes. Like the scenes where he's visiting Iroh in prison and basically like yelling at him, you know, like, and the thing is he's yelling at Iroh, but he's very clearly yelling at himself. Mm-hmm. And Iroh's just like saying nothing. Oh, if there was anything more heartbreaking than that, I was like, come on.
The scene where they finally meet back up. And he's like crying when he walks in. He's like, I thought you would never find yourself. That was the pinnacle of the moment. It's just such a good show.
Yes.
I don't want to talk too much about the actual Avatar show. Great show. Whole 3-hour episode about it. What are we expecting from the new one before?
We're going to have to.
We are. So what are the final thoughts on the new series that we have barely any information about so far? Like, what are some...
We don't have that much information. What I would say is I like the idea of, you know, I like the idea of redemption. Like, we don't know what the cataclysm was, mm-hmm. but I would hope that this is kind of like, okay, you know what? I've messed up the world so much. The best thing I can do is go out saving it. And then this new Avatar is kind of like in a bad place because of it.
What do you?
I like that she's an earthbender. Okay. That she's missing a leg is interesting. I can't wait to see what they do with that.
I'm into
because
that as well.
It has been time after time in Avatar where we see a bender that is somehow handicapped or has like
Remember the wheelchair kid season the first show? The wheelchair airbender
wheelchair
people.
Kid. I forgot about him.
Yeah, he like invented stuff so he could still be useful. Like this show is just so positive with how it portrays people. Of all groups
it
and
is.
Findings.
Except Korra, but yeah.
Yeah, they made the one gay character sucks.
There's more than one, I'm pretty sure. If I'm there is more than one because Kiyoshi was gay too.
Oh, I never read the books. That's not in the show as far as
I
know.
Yeah. Kiyoshi had a girlfriend named Rongi who was a firebender.
Wait, they made Kiyoshi the big woman? Okay. They made her a lesbian. Okay, I see what you're doing, Avatar.
I love Kiyoshi because she's basically the John Wick of Avatar, and it is so fucking cool.
I was
like, yes, let's go. Oh, you need to read the Legend of Kiyoshi, dude. It's so good.
So what do we think? Oh, sorry, go ahead. What's your thought?
No, I was going to say there's a Yang Chen book, too, but I haven't read that one, so I don't know.
What do you think caused the cataclysm? Like, what's your big theory? Let's throw some theories out real quick.
Well, obviously, the spirit gates being open. I bet you that there's spirits on the other side that we couldn't have possibly imagined.
Yeah, that's what my thought was too. I mean, I brought it up earlier. Also, I mentioned Katara being older. She's not older. She just acts older. I'm pretty sure. What's her name's her older brother? Wow.
Sokka
yeah.
is the older brother,
but she
to Katara,
acts
yes.
like the older sibling in the relationship.
She
has that responsibility.
It's almost like I feel like it's like a mother thing, and I think that the reason for that is, and this was something that Sokka brought up. But again, we're not going to go into The Last Airbender, but he basically said like whenever our mom died, Katara took her role. Basically,
yeah. I remember that. I'd mentioned that the reason that her and Zuko kind of related a little bit because they're both the older siblings. I'm like, wait, no, they're not. She just acts like she's the older sibling.
No, they're not.
She acts like a mother to Aang as well, which is also another reason I didn't like the relationship. Anyways. No talking about that. So I'm hoping...
You know, maybe Aang has a mommy thing. I don't know, man.
Don't they all? I hope that this new series gives us some more firebending. I hope the bending itself is way cooler. Because Series 1 had some of the coolest bending. I want to see them expand upon what you can do. And with an earthbender full-time, I want to see her do some insane stuff.
I got to point this out because, you know, like you're talking about the insane stuff, the Kiyoshi novel, dude, insane. Because like there's a lot of things that we don't talk about that benders could potentially do that they don't. Right. So like, for example, there's in the Kiyoshi novel, like waterbenders just make icicle spears and spear dudes through, just like skewer them. I'm like, whoa, what in the world? And I've been seeing like these TikToks where people talk about like, oh, these are the forbidden bending types for each element. So like, for example, firebenders with plasma and like waterbenders with blood, earthbenders with glass. And I was like, oh, glass bending would be so fucking sick.
I want to see that.
I want to see that.
She couldn't really bend sand too well though.
No, she couldn't. Kiyoshi looked like she could. They did this thing. You know what? Kiyoshi's a different story because I think her mom was an airbender too. So anyway,
well, we'll get to that. Well, it's coming, friends. The 3-hour episode about we're going to drag
the
in
3-hour episode of
we'll drag in all the stops, and we'll bring some people in here and be like, hey, so Avatar, huh? And then Bart and I will just talk over them the entire time.
Yeah, the entire time, because it looks to me like this is one that we both agree is just 100% like a 10 out of 10. At least, you know, the world and the first season, yes, Korra is kind of a weird place because I want to believe in her.
I still think it's good.
I want to believe in her, dude. I really want Korra to be
redeemed. I want her redeemed because that would be way better for story stuff. Make her fail harder. But yeah.
But yeah, so I think I'm excited, you know, because this is just another visit in a world that I really, really enjoy, you know, and I think that my positive experience with Avatar outweigh the negative ones. So, you know, even though Korra got a little weird with the relationships and, you know, sometimes it felt like they were just writing her character to be purposefully unlikable, I did enjoy her story, and I really enjoyed her grit as an Avatar that, you know, it really felt like it didn't matter how many times she got knocked down, she constantly kept trying to get back up, even when she was at her absolute lowest. So I really enjoyed that. I didn't care for the M. Night Shyamalan adaptation.
Didn't
I don't think
it.
Anybody did. At this point, I don't think that any of us would argue.
Did you watch the Netflix adaptation?
I did. And the thing about the Netflix adaptation is that I thought that there were some moments where they were cooking, like they really got something special going, and then they just completely never did that again.
Oh.
So better than the M. Night Shyamalan adaptation by miles, but still not as good as, you know, the last Airbender series.
Yeah, well, that's kind of hard to live up to. All I know is my friend said that she didn't like the way Sokka looked, so she didn't care about the show anymore. Because that was her childhood crush with Sokka.
Sokka was fine.
He's like, he's not good enough in this. I'm like, oh, okay.
They did make him funny, which is something that I really appreciated. And you know that there's something to be said about an actor who understands the character that he's playing.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy really felt like he really clicked with Sokka. I feel like if they had given him, because they tried to keep it more grounded, right? But I feel like if they had given him the material to just like really go nuts with it, he would have nailed it. I really feel that that's the case. But other than that, Kiyoshi novels, fantastic. Absolutely love both of them. It was excellent.
Have you read the follow-up graphic novels with like Zuko's mom and stuff?
No. I've heard about them and I know things of them, but
they're
I don't know.
I wonder if they're still going to be canon because they're making a new follow-up series with the cast, the gang, as they call them, but now they're older.
Yeah.
And they're also they're doing
it
several.
It may be the case that they're... I was going to say, it may be the case that they're set in that general era, you know?
Yeah, because those graphic novels are fantastic. They're super good. They establish a lot of like Zuko and Azula stuff. They also break up Zuko and Mei. And then there was never a follow up to who Zuko ends up with after that. But there's like a small moment with him. You know, that's just a whole other conversation. We'll just leave that for later. I got some theories.
I am really curious about who the father to Toph's daughters is, because that's
there
something
are
that
two
was
theories,
also never hit on.
And one is supposed to be Sokka, who cheated on whoever he ended up with Sokka or with
right.
Yeah, and knowing how they handled Korra, they 100% would do this. I believe that they would make that happen. They would just ruin Sokka's character, making him kind of like a man whore of sorts.
Right. I think that he was... Well, here's the thing. Sokka had the riz, dude. Everywhere he went, every nation he stepped on, there was a girl who was into him.
Which doesn't make sense to me, because he's such an average-looking dude, and he's funny, but never funny when they're there.
It's,
so
it's
why are they into
him?
Because
he's funny.
Well, he's funny it's because not he's when funny. They're there. He didn't say anything funny to Azula, and she's like, you're kind of cute. I was like, why?
Well, Ty Lee liked him.
So did Azula. She made a joke about him when they first meet.
Okay.
They all did, except for Mei, obviously, who...
Obviously, yeah, that's actually kind of funny.
I don't. My dude just pulls without even trying. It's crazy.
Yeah. He's got the riz, dude. What can I say? He's the riz bender.
Yeah. What was that? No. What do they call it? They called him the back bender.
Oh no.
I think that's probably the final joke of the episode.
Oh yes, but anyway. Avatar the Seven Havens, we don't know a release date yet. I think it has the potential to be really, really good, and I really hope it is.
I hope so as well. I wanted more Avatar. I've been wanting it for years. I rewatched the original show recently before we started our podcast. Actually, I was rewatching it because I wanted Yeah, literally right before we started this podcast, I was finishing the show again because I hadn't seen, in like probably a decade or at least a decade. So like, all right, let me rewatch it. Let me redo it. Let me get over this. Let me see this again. And yep, I rewatched the entire show and it was good.
Yeah, so I definitely recommend you check out the fourth season of Korra just for funsies. I honestly think it might surprise you with, you know, some things in it.
The only issue
I don't think that you're going to think it's great, but like, I don't think that you're going to think it's bad.
The issue I'd have with that is when I watch shows like this, I usually watch them with my wife, and there's no way she's going to put up with how Korra's first season goes down. You think I'm like picky with my media? My wife is way more picky with what she watches.
Yikes.
Yeah, but one thing annoys her, she's out. So
So until next time, I have been the Midnight Bard and Flame-Yo Hotman.
What?
It was a thing from The Last Airbender. And this has been Sacro, his cabbages!
Oh no, not my cab. I love cabbage. Actually, dude, I'm making this cabbage thing tonight. bye, guys.
Adios!